Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Trupanion is a proud sponsor of Pure Dog Talk. The Trupanion policy provides medical insurance for pets, helping to cover the veterinary expenses for unexpected injuries or illnesses. Trupanion also has a special program just for breeders, allowing you to send your litters home with a special offer to try out insurance. These offers waive the waiting periods, so coverage goes into effect immediately for your buyers. Puppies can get into mischief, but Trupanion helps to make the unexpected a little less intimidating. There's no cost to you to join, so sign up from our partner page to get started with Trupanion today. And don't forget to mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a really special guest today, and I think you guys are going to very much enjoy this story. This is the, as I was just mentioning to him, sort of the Cinderella story of the dog world for 2019. I have with me today Matt Palmer, and he is the individual who, with his very first show dog, a golden retriever, went to Westminster Kennel Club and won Best of Breed. And I know for a lot of my listeners out there, this was a listener request. For a lot of my listeners out there, this is absolutely their dream ambition. So welcome, Matt. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, thanks for reaching out. It feels really cool to be on here. I've heard your voice a lot on the highways driving the dog shows, so I need to be on the other end.
That's totally awesome. I love to hear that. So you're familiar. Give us the 411.
So right now I'm a defender in the Ozarks region of Missouri. Got my first show dog my first year of law school. Got him from a small breeder, Cat Walden, Marnie Pixley in Southern Colorado.
Okay.
I had no idea about anything in the show world, how to pick a good breeder, bad breeder. So I just, the AKC's website says, well, I'll ask these questions, and had a short list of breeders. And a good friend of mine said, hey, why don't you check out these two? And they kind of sort of serendipitously said, you know, if you're going to do the owner handler thing, you need a really good dog. And we have a really good dog. And if you want, come on out and pick them up. And that was 2 weeks before I was driving to Southern Colorado and came back with Merlin.
That is just awesome. Okay, so it's awesome on multiple levels. Breeders, listen up. Here is a breeder who, I mean, this is a conversation we're all having right now on social media. Breeders, sell a good dog to a new person. Look what can happen. Just, I love that.
I mean, I really can't say enough about my relationship with Cat and Marnie. I had talked to them after I had talked to a couple other breeders, and, you know, the other breeders were really nice. And they said, well, we could potentially have a show puppy. Then they kind of explained that, hey, if we sell you a show puppy, we really expect it to be shown. Right. And I had never shown a dog before. I had no idea if I would like it. And so I talked to Cat and Marnie, and they said, hey, just promise you'll give it a try. And if you don't like it, then you got a pretty pet. And it was a really cool thing to hear. And, you know, they've been unbelievable mentors along the way. And the same is true for, I have a Toller and a Clumber now.
Look at you.
That I'm just sort of, you know, yeah, just sort of, you know, I got bit by it, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it really is a product of people taking chances, breeders taking chances. And, you know, it's hard because if you have a good puppy, you know, as a breeder, you think of what it could turn into, and to give that to somebody you really don't know that much about, it's a big unknown. And, you know, I empathize with that. It's a hard thing to do. But yeah, you know, I hope that at least my story could encourage some other breeders to say, you know, hey, there are people that they didn't grow up around the sport. They're new to it. They saw it on TV and thought, hey, that's kind of cool. And maybe they can be the next me if I'm even a me worth being. So
I'm pretty sure you're a me worth being. And it's one of the greatest parts of this conversation, just talking to you earlier. The humble, the humility. I love that. What, you people talked about me? I'm like, yeah, babe. Everybody talked about you. I think it's fabulous. I absolutely love it. Okay, so you've got great mentors in your breeders. You've gotten a really beautiful dog. How do you get started? You've never shown a dog. You're a public defender guy, right? Like, this isn't your day job at all.
No.
How did you get started? How did you do it?
So the genesis of the whole even kind of wanting to get into it, I had a pet dog that I still have, and I was living out with my parents in Philadelphia at the time, outside of Philadelphia. And the Thanksgiving dog show was going on, and I heard a radio announcement that they had vendors. I had never been to a dog show before, but I said, I'll go and I'll get some stuff for my dog. And I walked in, and it was the Thursday or Friday before, they do the big show. And I walked in, and there was just this row of golden retrievers. And, you know, you see golden retrievers a lot. You see them in TV and popular culture. And I think it's true with any breed that, you know, you see them in public, you see them in the media, but when you see them when they're prepared to be shown, I mean, it's show stopping.
Yes.
And I just went, wow, those are the most gorgeous dogs I've ever seen. And I thought, I totally want to get one. And it's kind of a cool thing. It was, you know, people are dressed nicely. It's this kind of, you know, social, leisurely, competitive thing all wrapped into one. And so got Merlin, the golden puppy, and sort of waited for him to grow up. Our first show, I went out back to Colorado and went to a show with the breeders. And it was so terrible looking back on it. My breeders truly had no idea how little I knew. They asked and said, hey, you know, why don't you bathe him and blow out the puppy and then bring him over? And so I thought, oh, okay. And they called me like 2 hours later and they said, hey, just checking in. Where are you? And I said, well, you know, I gave him a bath, but this hotel hairdryer is taking forever. And Marnie, who's a professional groomer, I mean, you could just hear the short circuit in her brain over the phone when she heard that. And she says, Matt, put the puppy in the car and come over to my setup right now. And I didn't even know there was such things as, you know, dryers other than like a hairdryer, you know. So it was a big requirement on their part and also on the part, as I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, other owner handlers and professional handlers to sort of scaffold me into knowing how to groom a dog, present a dog. But yeah, I mean, pretty much started from, I have a leash and I have a suit and that was about it. So,
hey, you had a suit, you know, some people don't even start that far down the road. That's good. That's good. I had one guy that insisted on owner handling his own dog and he was a construction worker. He bought a suit just to show his dog. And he told his wife that that would be the suit he would be buried in because it was the only suit he was ever going to own.
Right.
Loved that.
You get a black one, you only need one.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what he did. Scaffolding, I like that. I like that reference. That's a really great way, kind of visually, for people to understand how this works. So talk to me about, I mean, you're in Colorado, you're in Kansas. There's a lot of great people around you. Talk to me about some of those people that kind of, if you will, took you under their wing.
To even begin to count how many people had an influence, whether directly helping me at a show or even indirectly sharing, you know, a Facebook message, hey, how do you do this? Just an example, my experience in the dog world has been, maybe I've just been naive to others, but everyone has been some of the most helpful people you could meet. I was at the Oklahoma City shows, the summer ones, and I took Merlin in open and he won open and in a real big open class with some really beautiful dogs. And Carrie Rosenketter and Bob Hallahan, they are close to Purina Farms and I had just sort of known them by proximity and they had always been great and really just, hey, come on out and, you know, I'll give you some grooming tips, things like that. And we're in the open class and Merlin needed his last major at that point. And so, you know, I was like, oh my God, I have a chance to take this really big 5-point major with all these big timers here. And, you know, we get into Winner's Dog and Carrie was behind me with her Ambred dog. And we had gone around and we were stacked and, you know, she stacked her dog and then looks over and sees, you know, I had not stacked my dog perfectly, which was usually the case. And, you know, she waited till the judge wasn't looking and she leaned over and said, hey, pull this leg back a little bit. Put the collar up and get his neck up. And I mean, that's, you know, during the ring when she's actively trying to win with her own dog.
Right.
And that's just a singular experience that is very symbolic of the experiences that I've had with a number of people, a number of professional handlers who, after they've spent all day on their feet working with their dogs, and it's a job to them, so it can be very stressful. And still at 6 o'clock, you know, I'll walk by and say, hey, do you mind giving me a few pointers? And, you know, they'll drop what they're doing and they'll take me and say, hey, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that right. And that's after doing it for 12 hours, they still make time for just a random guy coming up to them. So the mentoring has been, everyone I've come across has helped me in one way or another. So it's been fantastic.
I love that. See, that's my experience as well, both giving it and receiving it, right? So I love it.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important for people to hear that story, you know? And did you have access to handling classes near you? You said you've listened to the podcast. What help did you get on a day-to-day basis?
So when I went to law school, I was in Topeka, and there was a woman there who had her own training facility, and there's the Kennel Club out there. And they would have their weekly classes that I would show up to when I didn't have my own class, or at least I couldn't skip a class. And so it was good just being able to have dogs in front of Merlin and practice going around in a distracted environment. The woman who owns it, Kelly Bausch, I think her aunt is Carmen Herbal. And she was visiting one day and took an afternoon and gave me some feedback. Kind of maybe a little bit embarrassing, but you know, one of the things that I didn't know about when I was learning was that when I would go to stack Merlin, that he would kind of tense up.
Mm-hmm.
And when Carmen was visiting her niece, she was at the training facility, and I came in to kind of just work on some stuff, and she offered some help, and she said, Matt, you know, when you go to stack him, you know, he kind of tenses up, and what do you think that's all about? And we had this moment where we kind of worked through it, and in this oddly therapeutic way, we sort of discovered that being a larger person, I was always worried about my jacket riding up and basically mooning everyone ringside. And she says, well, why don't you get a pair of suspenders? I said, well, I never thought of that. So I went, you know, on Amazon, ordered some suspenders. And I mean, from that day forward, the stacks went great. Merlin was like a totally, you know, because he wasn't feeling that coming down the lead.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was just a funny kind of, you know, there's so much that when you're handling the dog yourself, it's hard for you to get that crucial outside visual of what you're doing and how the dog's responding to it. But she was able to provide that. And now I have like 10 pairs of suspenders and a couple emergency suspenders in my pack box.
I'm telling you how suspenders made my dog a Westminster Kennel Club winner. I'm all about it.
There you go. If it wasn't for the suspenders, he might not even be finished. I don't know.
Oh my God. I love that. And you are absolutely right. That's so much that we don't even think about, right? That someone from outside has to tell us. And I was a professional handler for 25 years, and there would be things I would do and somebody would say to me, no, dude, really? You can't. And so that awareness, that personal and physical awareness, and the teamwork that you create with your dog as an owner handler, I think is really an enormous part of that story.
Yeah, I think every owner handler has a similar story of that, of just the unique kind of individual bond they have with their dog. So,
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. I'm so excited. I just can't hide it. Yeah, I know. I promised I was never going to sing again. But I'm saying our new audiobook is available now. Yeah. Pure Dog Talks, How to Stack Your Dog and Other Important Talks is a 2-CD set featuring early mentoring episodes from the podcast, tips, and previously unrecorded pep talks. This is a power-packed opportunity for folks who don't want to search our exhaustive 260-some-odd episode library for just the topic they're looking for. This 2-hour series is a great resource for breeders and mentors, 4-H leaders, anybody that's looking for a straight line trajectory from what kind of dog should I get to raising a show dog, how to stack and move with your dog, to counting championship points for your new dog. Super easy to purchase. Just drop PayPal $25 a book to Laura at puredogtalk.com. And make sure audiobook is in the comments and that your mailing address is included. Because shipping is free, that's on me, and I'll have it to you in just a few days. breeder and mentor bundles are available. I'll give you a 10% discount on 5 or more, and this is a very limited print run. So get your order in today. May not be here tomorrow. After you finished him as a champion, did you compete in the Owner Handled series? Did you compete in regular best of breed? I mean, how old was he when he won the breed this year at the Garden?
He had just turned 3 about a month before. He finished when he was just about 2. So we showed in the breed ring a couple times. I'm pretty sure he had finished his grand championship before he went to Westminster. So we had done the owner handler my first year doing it. And it was great for giving us that extra time in the ring. That it was always kind of frustrating. You know, you feel like you do all this work and all this prep and, you know, you drive 8 hours to a dog show and you set up, you spend 2 hours grooming the dog, and then you show for 5 minutes and, you know, and then you're done.
Right.
The owner handler thing was a cool way to kind of extend the day. Just my personal feeling was that after a while, it wasn't my goal to compete for an owner handler ribbon. You know, I played sports growing up. I just tend to be probably competitive to a fault. And, you know, I said, Matt, it's really cool to have that extra time in the ring, but I didn't want the maroon ribbon. You know, I wanted the purple and gold one. And so that's kind of what I wanted my focus to be. And so we stopped after the first year. And it was kind of needed because knowing that you're not going to have that extra time in the ring unless you are really kind of on your game, it gives you, I think, a little bit more of an incentive to take that extra little step in grooming or, you know, work with the dog a little bit before going in the ring, just things that you might kind of brush off and say, well, I'll get the owner handler ribbon and do a little bit better grooming for the owner handler groups.
Right.
So.
Right. Really valid. And so coming into Westminster Kennel Club, going to that dog show, had that been a goal? Was that just sort of, you know, what prompted you to travel from Missouri to Manhattan?
You know, it's Westminster. It kind of has this mystique about it. And at the time, I just felt like, hey, you know, it'd be cool to go out and to see it and see all the big timers, I guess, for lack of a better description. And I mean, we had absolutely no expectation of finding significant success. I thought, hey, you know, if I can make a cut or two, that'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, oddly, a couple weeks before, because of my schedule, I had just started my job, I don't know, 6 months before, and my caseload was starting to build up. And I thought, well, you know, it's going to be a long drive. It's going to be a lot of money to just show for 10 minutes and then be done. And so I planned on not even going. And I talked to a good handler friend from Colorado. And I just said, listen, man, this is, you know, it's going to be a lot of money. I'd really love to go, but it doesn't seem worth it. And he said, well, there was another handler coming from Colorado with a truck full of dogs. He said, hey, you can ride with him and kind of split the cost, at least on traveling out there. And so that made it a little more feasible. So had it not been for that encouragement, I never even would have gone.
Awesome. And so you're traveling out with a handler with a truckload of dogs. Are you helping X? You're getting more experience while you're doing this trip.
Yeah. And that's always been something that I've tried to do is, you know, I think oftentimes there's kind of a divide between the owner handler and the professional handlers where there doesn't need to be one. I've always tried to approach them and say, hey, you know, I'd be happy to hold your dogs or watch them on a table or whatever. If you could take 10 minutes, give me a little feedback, this and that. And so having done that for a couple of years prior to Westminster, I had developed, I think, a pretty good network of friends, both owner handler and professional handlers. And anytime there's a chance to learn from the professionals, I mean, it's invaluable. You know, they've been doing it for sometimes 30, 40, 50 years. So to pick up anything you can, I mean, it was a great experience to go out with Mike Luther and Sarah Luther. They were the handlers that I went out with. And just absorbing the things that are second nature to them, that are reflexive to them, are something that would have been learned to me.
Right.
So being able to watch that, watch, you know, how they have a large group of dogs, how they prepare them, it made the entire trip not only possible, but it made it that much better. And, you know, it was really cool. I mean, Mike, he's a good friend. And he was showing, I think, later in the day at the piers, and Goldens were, I think, at like 8 or 8:30 or something early. And so I went out there early, and independently, he woke up and met me down at the piers at 6:30, helped get the dog ready. And we go in the ring, and he had X'd his dogs. He could have gone back to the hotel and got a few hours of sleep before you know, it's his time to go in, and instead he grabs a bucket and a towel and stands ringside and cheers me on. I mean, it was a really cool thing. But again, I think indicative of probably 99% of my interaction with people in the dog show world.
That is a great story. It is really awesome. So going to the garden for your very first time, what was overwhelming? What seemed simple? What was terrifying? What was gratifying? How did that go?
By far, the most terrifying thing was Merlin had not pooped for like 3 days because he had never been in like a total concrete area ever. You know, he grew up in Kansas and Missouri, and you know, there's big fields. It's like, well, why would I poop in the parking lot when there's 20 acres behind it? And I mean, God, I tried to get him to poop. He wouldn't. And I was mortified that he was going to go out and touch that green carpet and go, this is a great place to poop.
This is so real. I have to tell you, this is so incredibly real.
So, I mean, the hardest part, you know, and the most nerve-wracking part was far and away the breed. I mean, walking, doing the tunnel, Madison Square Garden, awesome experience. But we had already accomplished something that I had no concept that I would even accomplish it. So there was no pressure. And it was just a couple of owner handler friends and professional handlers came up to me before and said, just look around and enjoy it. And I took that advice. And it was an oddly calm and cool thing to be out there because, you know, there was no pressure at that point. It was just, you're out there with your dog. You're on the journey together. It's a wonderful stop in the journey. And it's almost like you get to the top of the mountain, take a second, enjoy the view. That was kind of what it was. And also don't poop on the carpet. I didn't do that. It was a huge, huge win.
Oh my God. I have to tell you, that is so incredibly real. I've been there, done that. In the breed, any advice to people? Did you do anything different? Were you super nervous? How did you manage your nerves? All of those kind of things.
I'm sure I was nervous. You know, I like to say that I wasn't, but Pam Bruce, I think, she was stewarding. Mm-hmm. And we had ran around a couple times, and I guess she looked at me and was legitimately concerned that I was about to fall over and lose consciousness.
Oh, God.
So I'm sure there were some nerves. Honestly, I have no idea what I did. It was, you know, you try to approach it like it's just another dog show, but it's, you know, it's not. And hopefully if we go back, then it won't be our first time doing it and the nerves won't be there. But, you know, your first time doing any big thing like that, there's going to be some nerves and try to push through it. I mean, Merlin, he's always been a dog where I can pick up a lead and he'll show himself. You know, I'm sure I could just tell him and he'd gate around the ring on his own and I could just stand there. So, you know, he's the type of dog where I just get out of the way and let him do his thing. And it was really cool because, you know, at the piers, everyone's right there ringside and there's a lot of people and you can really just feel the atmosphere. And he picked up on that, was just a little extra step showy, extra step reach. I mean, he outperformed me in every way you could imagine. So,
well, I just absolutely love it. What was your celebration? Did you have a big party? What'd you do?
No, we got done at the garden and everything between like 1 or 2, which is way past my usual bedtime of like 8. And we packed up and Mike and I drove back. I woke up to Mike having taken a wrong turn and we were like 6 hours into a part of Pennsylvania that we shouldn't have been into. And so we kind of just gave up and said, well, let's get a hotel and get 4 hours of sleep. So that was our big celebration. Instead of just driving through the night, we stopped and got a hotel. So,
well, you know, I am not laughing at you. I am laughing with you. This is the most fabulous story ever. Having driven to New York myself from Nebraska when I lived there and drove with my client who was 75 years old and deaf in his left ear. And so I completely am seeing this picture. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It sounds stupid, but those kind of stories have been the best part of the dog show journey. Succeeding at Westminster, I mean, it was a once-in-a-lifetime memory, but, you know, the 11 o'clock drives with a friend where you know, listening to whatever on the radio and having stupid conversations. I mean, it's an extension of the hockey I played growing up, that sort of team atmosphere, the friendship building and everything. And that's been far and away the coolest thing about being in dog shows is just moments like that. So, yeah, I don't know. Hopefully we'll find another road trip partner and we'll get lost one day and have some fun.
I love that. So at the outset, you said you have two new dogs, a Clumber, which I love, of course, and a Toller. And you're showing them, I assume, and maybe planning another trip to the garden?
Yeah. So I got the Toller, oddly, because I always lost in Goldens and breed, and I wanted something that I could have a little more success with. And so I got the Toller, and he's a great, great Toller from Vicky and Barry Wagner in Minnesota. And they, you know, again, just like Cat and Marnie, took a chance and said, hey, we'll give you one of our good dogs and just go out and have fun with it. And yeah, the Clumbers, she's the newest addition just a couple months ago. Just fortunate enough to hook up with Doug Johnson, who's trying to grow the Clumber breed and place some of his girls
in
home.
I wondered if that was one of the bitches. I wondered about that. That is awesome.
Yeah.
That particular thing that Doug and Jamie did with that particular group of puppies, I love. And I am so excited for you that you have one, because they are such great and sincere mentors about it.
It's been a phenomenal experience. It's still pretty new, but yeah, it's a cool thing. It was totally just, well, why not throw them a Facebook message? I wasn't very knowledgeable of the breed, but they've always kind of been cool. And you see them from afar and kind of go, that's kind of a neat dog. I'd love to learn more about it. And she fits in with the backyard great.
Mm-hmm.
So she's fun to have around, and hopefully it'll help raise the number of Clumbers and get some more of them out there. And hopefully it's a win-win for everyone.
I love that. And so future plans. Yeah, I mean, clearly you have more dogs to show. A Clumber bitch that maybe you can become a breeder as well as a dog shower. What else do you have on the plate?
Yeah. So the Clumber, she'll go back to Doug and Jamie, and, you know, I wouldn't even know where. I just survived her first heat. So, and that was a traumatic enough experience. So as far as breeding, I don't know. I'll let Doug and Jamie do all that. You know, it's dog shows to me have been a great social outlet. And so our future plans, it's just to keep going. I mean, just keep going to the shows. You know, every show I go to, having met people in Goldens and then Tollers, and then, you know, now I guess I'll get to meet some Clumber people. And it's so cool because you walk around the show site and everywhere you go, every corner, you see somebody that you met from somewhere, and, you know, you get to check in and hear how their life's going and their journey's taken them, and go to the next corner of the show site, and it's a completely different story from somebody that you know just as well. And so we're just having fun. We have fun going, and we're not campaigning a dog. We're just going to the shows, and, you know, sometimes we win and most of the time we don't, but when we do, it's pretty fun. So we'll just go to some shows and keep chipping away at it.
I love this. Absolutely love it. Well, Matt, thank you so much. I have taken plenty of your Sunday afternoon for this, and I am very grateful for you sharing your story. It is absolutely fabulous, and I'm looking forward to watching you on your journey.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, certainly, you know, anybody out there who's listening, see me at a show, stop and say hi, and we'll talk dogs together for a little bit. So thanks for having me on.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.